seriously popular.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
In today's episode,
why Pep was wrong to call out Jack in front of the world,
have Arsenal finally grown up,
and does Roberto De Zerbi really want out of Brighton? I'm Ian Ladyman.
I'm Chris Sutton.
And it's all kicking off.
Chris, happy Easter. If I was an Arsenal fan, I would be waking up this morning with a huge smile on my face.
Would you second in the table behind Liverpool? I get why you would, because I think that everybody can see that under Mikel Arteta, there's been a great deal of progress this season. 4 points against Manchester City in the two head-to-head games. Really accomplished display. But I do think there's probably an element of Arsenal fans waking up this morning thinking, could we have been a little bit braver, maybe, and won the game?
They could have been a little bit braver and lost the game. I think my takeaway from it, and the reason I say that they should be waking up with a big smile on their face this morning, is that if you look at the bigger picture, that was a massive step forward for Arsenal. This is a football team that is used to going to the Etihad, coming home having lost, and not just having lost, but having lost pretty comfortably. 3 goals, 4 goals over previous seasons. And then they have gone there. They have kept the best team in the world empty-handed. I think City had one shot on goal. They had one shot on goal in the game when they lost at the Emirates early in the season. That's a massive step forward. Bigger picture time. This is an Arsenal team that is growing up. This is an Arsenal team that has probably grown up. The two centre-halves were magnificent, refused to allow themselves to be bullied.
And Ben White.
Absolutely. Refused to allow them. But I thought the two centre-halves particularly refused to allow themselves to be bullied by Erling Haaland. They're quite happy to get into the physical side of that competition, and you could argue probably won it. Pep Guardiola was a little bit sniffy about the way that Arsenal sat behind the ball. There's nothing wrong with that.
He called them long ball Arsenal, yeah. In an interview I heard on numerous occasions, which was, you know, a bit of sour grapes there.
Definitely sour grapes. And if you're an Arsenal fan, you hear that and think, absolutely spot on. That's what we want. We are under their skin. We didn't go there and give them what they wanted, which was an open game of football. We went there and played the way that we wanted to play. That game was one that played out to our rhythms and not theirs. And if you can do that at Manchester City, that gives you such hope for the future. Whether Arsenal win the league or not this season, and I take your point, Liverpool are now in the box seat because of yesterday's results. But regardless of whether Arsenal win the league, what a position they are now in going forward. A young team ready to be built on and to grow together. Like I say, if I was an Arsenal fan, I'd be ever so optimistic after that.
Yeah, and I think the fact that that Mikel Arteta, the situation he took over at Arsenal, the way he's built them, the way that he has shown he is so flexible and adaptable. I mean, twice they've played Manchester City this season. They haven't, you know, they certainly haven't been gung-ho and they've been rear guard displays, but they, you know, still carried a threat, found a way in the game at the Emirates. look, would he have liked to create more opportunities? Probably. But overall, it did feel like that Arsenal have made another step in the right direction. Having said that, it was still Liverpool's day yesterday. And however, all the praise we, we're louding on Arsenal, Liverpool now have to be favourites to win the Premier League with the way yesterday panned out.
I mean, we'll get to Liverpool, the Liverpool-Brighton game in a minute, but given that you've raised it, I agree with you. They are favourites. I think the fact that they have got... excuse me while I pause, because I'm just looking at my notes. Yeah, Liverpool have got Man United away, Everton away, Aston Villa away between now and the end of the season. So those would be the three that may stand out as banana skins, I suppose. But yeah, Liverpool favourites, and we will get to that in a minute. But back to Arsenal. So that was the first time since October 2021 that City hadn't scored at home in a league game. That was a run of 47 games. I think that also speaks volumes for the way that Arsenal played. And I just think that someone like myself and yourself, we've been watching Premier League football for a long time in our various roles, and we are used to looking at Arsenal and saying that they're, you know, that they're soft and that they're vulnerable and that they're not as psychologically strong as some of the other big teams. And I just don't think you can say that anymore. And I think that is the biggest compliment that I can pay them on the back of yesterday. It wasn't a brilliant game. Our producer, Henry, who's an Arsenal fan, is a little bit irritated about the fact that Trossard didn't whip the ball across to Martinelli when they had that chance on the break with 10 minutes to go. And I think he's right to be. I think that could have been a massive moment. Didn't quite come off. But we're picking, you know, we're splitting hairs with that one, I think.
You know what, though? It's still a wait and see, isn't it? Because at the end of the season, all the praise we're giving Arsenal, if Arsenal end up finishing in second place, they would have fallen short, albeit, you know, they would have made progress.
I think there's progress on the back of last season.
It's a hell of a title race.
I think there's progress on the back of last season, and I think that's all you can ask for. You know, you're in a competition that's skewed by Manchester City's brilliance. You know, this is not, I've said it many times before, what Manchester City do is not normal. The standards that they manage to maintain, it's not normal. The environment's not normal.
But this season, Ian, Manchester City's standards have slipped. You look at their performances against the top five teams, they haven't won a game against the top five teams in the Premier League. So, you know, we have to say Manchester City have dipped slightly. The one which I don't think... Look, did we think that Liverpool could compete off the back of last season as they have done? I don't think we possibly would have seen them progress and leap and jump as they have done. So, I mean, what a title race we've got on.
No, it's a rare old time to be alive, as I often say. I know you're well aware of how optimistic I am generally about life and how kind of bubbly and half full my glass is. So, yeah, it's a rare old time to be alive as a Premier League football fan. Now, I want to get into a couple of incidents that came out of that game, talking points. First one is Erling Haaland. Like I say, he had a heck of a battle with Gabriel and Saliba. It was brilliant to watch that. In the middle of what was not a particularly exciting game. I thought those individual battles were fascinating. Afterwards, Roy Keane on Sky, former Manchester United captain, had a bit of a pop at Haaland. Was quite happy to admit that the way he scores goals and the rest of it is second to none. But described him as a League Two player in terms of his link-up play. The levels of his general play are so poor, not just today. His general laying off, headers, whatever it might be in terms of front of goal, is best in the world. Sorry for that, but I'm just reading the quote literally. He's essentially saying his goal scoring is top class, but for his general play, for such a player, it is so poor. Not just today. I think he has to improve that. He's almost like a League Two player.
Slightly harsh. I think that inevitably, the fact that, I mean, that the stat you brought up, Manchester City not scoring at home, was at best part of 3 years. You know, everybody's looking for a reason for that and a scapegoat. And I think it's slightly unfair because we all know why Erling Haaland was signed for Manchester City. Why was he signed? To score goals. So that's not... Look, can his hold-up play be neater? Can it be better? Can he be cleaner? Yes, he can, but that's not what he was brought for. I mean, the bigger problem yesterday for Manchester City, you said one shot on target, but how many chances did Haaland have? He had the big chance, which, you know, he did fluff his lines, which was unlike him, where he, you know, should have popped it in from close range, totally missed the ball. That's very unlike Erling Haaland. But, there, you know, this season, I think it's fair to say, he still had an excellent season, but he hasn't hit the heights of last season. But that those sort of heights are always going to be difficult to hit. So I think the greater problem for City was the lack of creativity from other areas. And even at the end, listen, and you know, it's very difficult to criticise Pep Guardiola, but every time I've seen Doku play, he has been so effective off the left-hand side, and all of a sudden, maybe it was just, you know, the quality of the opposition yesterday, but he didn't seem to impact as well off the right as he has done previously. So Haaland isn't the problem, as far as I can see. I just think that that Roy Keane and what have you, and you know, the other guys in the studio are just looking for something there, and to level him as a League Two hold up player, well, that's just not true. That's unfair.
You can watch City play, and you know this because we've both talked about it before, and Haaland, if he's not scoring, can be completely anonymous, which is weird for a bloke of his shape and size and, you know, distinctive, you know, long blonde hair and all the rest of it. He can be anonymous. But before you interrupt, he can. I've been at games. I remember being at a game in Copenhagen when he literally touched the ball 7 times in the first hour. But I think that is the way he is asked to play by Pep. I don't think he's asked to come totally and link play. If that was, you know, we all know the way Harry Kane plays. Harry Kane can be as effective 40 yards from goal as he can be 6 yards from goal. Erling Haaland is not that type of player. And Manchester City have these players who happen to be quite good at that stuff. Kevin De Bruyne, Bernardo Silva, Jack Grealish, others, Phil Foden, for example, who play their football 40 yards from goal. For Manchester City, Erling Haaland is asked to play his football in and around the penalty area. And I think that's the top and bottom of it. The Pep Guardiola Jack Grealish thing, for people who weren't watching, Grealish, as we know, has had injury problems this season. He's had form problems. Came on for the last 20 minutes or so yesterday. I think actually did okay. There was one lovely little bit of skill where he checked back onto his left foot and popped a ball up to the far post for Jeremy Doku, who didn't make a very good job of it. Anyway, Pep Guardiola clearly didn't see it that way, because as the teams left the field, Guardiola became involved in one of those instance where he looks like he's publicly lecturing his player, and he absolutely got into Jack Grealish in front of 40, 50,000 people plus people watching on television. And I have to say, I don't like it. It's unnecessary. It's performative. It's for the cameras, or it looks that way. You can wait until you get to the dressing room. Jack Grealish, as you and I both know, I've got a soft spot for Jack. I've sat down and interviewed him. I think he's a genuine lad. I think he cares deeply about his football. I think Jack Grealish in many ways is everything that we like about the modern Premier League, and that he's a bit of glamour about him, but fundamentally is an honest, hard-working footballer. He's had a terrible season. He may not go to the European Championships this season because of his form and his injuries. And there he is getting bollocked in public by his manager. He looked broken. Grealish looked broken as Guardiola was doing that. And I'm not here for it. I'm not here for that, Chris. And I'm sure Jack Grealish isn't here for it either. I don't know why Pep does that. I don't know why he does it. He's done it before with other players.
Yeah, I wish you had a soft spot for me, like you do, Jack. I didn't see it as such a big deal, because he has done it before. It's the end of it, you know. It's the end of the game. There's a real frustration that he may know that yesterday was the day that the title slipped out of City's hands, and he's a coach. And I actually watched it back this morning. I've watched it a few times. I didn't see it as a public berating. Maybe I'm going soft. I think it was, you know, maybe a misunderstanding that whatever Pep had told Jack Grealish to do, then, you know, he hadn't done it. But it didn't seem like he was, you know, absolutely admonishing him and, you know, slamming him. It didn't feel like that. It was just a coaching point. And we've seen Pep do that before. I do take your point about the you know, the public image, and the fact we're talking about it now tells you that it's a, you know, it is a debating point, and many people will feel like you. But I didn't see it like that. Is it your point would be he should have left it for the dressing room, and I understand that, but I didn't see that as a real public dressing down and Guardiola trying to embarrass Grealish. It was just a moment after the game where everybody, you know, players, coaching staff, everybody's pumped up, full of adrenaline.
I think you're
and
being,
he saw his team not pick up the win.
I think you're being very generous towards Pep Guardiola there. He is a coach, but he's also a manager of people. And let me draw this analogy. If you and I finish this podcast in London, our head of sport and Henry, our producer, and other people aren't happy with the podcast and they want to haul us in and talk to us about it. Do you want that to take place in an office with the people who matter, or do you want that to take place on the editorial floor in front of everybody else, so everyone else can hear us being dressed down for not doing our jobs very well? Where do you want that to happen?
Well, I don't know. I've not been hauled in yet.
Maybe it's just me.
I totally take your point. But I got up early this morning to watch it back. I didn't think. I'm no body language expert. I'm no expert, Ian. But I didn't think it was to that extreme where Pep had set out to embarrass him. I thought it looked like a coaching point, and that was that. But the fact we're talking about it, you know, there will be a lot of people out there who will have the same view as you. And I do think had he really slammed him publicly, then that would not be a good look. So I agree with you on that.
We'll agree to disagree and move on. Now, you did say earlier that you think yesterday was a great day for Liverpool, which of course it was. They beat Brighton 2-1, came from behind. They are top of the Premier League now by 2 points. Just returning to the point that I made earlier about their away games, United away, Everton away, Villa away. I do think that Jurgen Klopp's team do have a little bit to do before they can send him off into his sabbatical with a second Premier League title. You're looking earnestly at your notes.
I'm just getting one. Yeah, no, I'm just getting the fixtures left. I think it's still pretty much impossible to you look at the fixtures and, you know, the old Sam Allardyce one, they're going to win this one, they're going to draw that one. I think Liverpool have pretty generous fixtures. You can look at Manchester United away and think, well, Manchester United just beat Liverpool in the FA Cup. They raised the game. And then you watch Manchester United at Brentford and think, God, is that the same? Is that the same team? So, look, Liverpool are in an incredible position. You know, the result for them was brilliant yesterday. I look at all their fixtures and you think, well, Villa away, they've got the Merseyside derby, and who knows what's going to happen to, you know, Everton. They're sort of dropping like a stone. So, you know, a couple of tricky fixtures, Tottenham at home. But overall, I think they've got a generous run of games, Liverpool, from now to the end of the season. It's just holding the nerve. And, you know, what did yesterday mean going forward? It means that the pressure's really on Arsenal and Manchester City now, because there isn't any margin of error now for them. They can't afford another
City have Villa at home this week. This is a really full Premier League programme over the next couple of days. Liverpool are at home to Sheffield United.
I forgot Liverpool have Fulham away, and that's not an easy fixture as well.
City have Villa at home this week. And after that, the only fixture of note that City have really got It's Tottenham away, where they historically don't do well, although they did do well there this season in the FA Cup. So I think it's going to, well, it's stating the obvious, which we don't like to do on this podcast, but I'm going to. It's going to be tight. Let's just say it's going to be tight. Now, you were quite interested. Before I say this, I do want to make the point that the Xabi Alonso news that came out of Germany over the weekend, I think, was hugely disappointing for Liverpool. Alonso is deciding to stay for at least one more year at Bayer Leverkusen, which makes him unavailable to succeed Klopp at Anfield. I think that's a huge blow for Liverpool.
Lack of ambition from Alonso?
I think that's the...
Do you like that?
You can look at it two ways. You can view it as loyalty, and I see that. You can view it as a coach who saying to himself, I've only been doing this for a year or so. I need more experience under my belt before I go and move to an elite job, with the greatest respect to Leverkusen. So that's one way of looking at it. The other way is thinking, well, opportunities like this only come round every so often. Say Liverpool appoint somebody else and they do a marvellous job and are at Liverpool for 5 years, then, you know, Alonso's star may be on the ground by the time 5 years comes around. So sometimes I think you need to grab those opportunities when they arrive. But I do think it's a huge blow for Liverpool, a really huge blow for Liverpool. He was the outstanding candidate. Now, one of the other candidates, Roberto De Zerbi, the Brighton manager, I know you were quite interested by what he said to the media when he was asked about his own future and why he's not signed a new contract at Brighton after the game yesterday.
Well, he basically has said to, I don't think just Liverpool, but to every club out there, come and get me. He may as well have held up a placard saying, I'm available. I want out. I just think, you know, you're a journalist. You ask managers questions and managers answer the questions. So De Zerbi's under contract till 2026. You know, he was asked about the situation and he could have just battered it away and, you know, and said something along the lines of, we're still in discussion. But some of the stuff he said, I thought was unnecessary, and I would view it as loaded. He said the problem is not the contract. The problem is to find the same plan, the same target, the same vision for the future. Now, on the face of it, some people will look at that as, you know, maybe saying, well, he's got every right to feel that way. But he's, as far as I can see, he's suggesting that there, or people can read that as suggesting that there's a problem, that he's not on the same wavelength as Tony Bloom. So why did he come out and say all this stuff? If I don't feel comfortable, I don't feel the right motivation, I can't stay any longer. Is he using those words as a bargaining tool to bring a better quality of player in, or is he using those words to sort of say, I want out? I think he's using those words saying, I want out, I want to move on. He's enjoyed his time at Brighton, but why on earth get involved in all that when you could just bat that away? So I don't get it. I thought that was pretty poor. If I'm a Brighton fan, I am pretty peed off at
Before
Deserby.
I get into that, he did, Deserby got quite a big endorsement from Jurgen Klopp after yesterday's game. Klopp said, I told him to keep turning the world upside down. I respect so much what he's doing and I will watch it from some distance. Now, Deserby himself, as you touched on there, said, I will speak with Tony Bloom, the owner, and the club, and we will find a solution together without problems. But I know my future and what I want. We both have to be happy about the targets, myself and the club. I want to compete, keep my ambition high. I want to wake up happy every morning and fight to reach the maximum. So
don't we all?
I don't know. I'm just happy to wake up every morning. I think your point is that he's leaving the door open, and of course he's leaving the door open, because De Zerbi, in common with many other managers back over the years, will probably want to go to Liverpool. I'm guessing, probably will fancy going to Liverpool, but he can't say that. But equally, he doesn't want to say something that will be thrown back at him by Brighton fans in 3 months' time. So he's not going to categorically say, I just want to stay, I can't wait to sign my contract, because he knows that'll be chucked back at him.
He can say, we're in talks.
He's trying to fudge it.
But he can kick the can down the road. You know that as well as me. He can kick the can down the road.
What do you mean in talks?
Well, he can say there are ongoing discussions. He can say anything, and bat that back. And he hasn't done.
Because any reporter worth his or her salt will then say, do you want to stay? They'll then say, if Liverpool offered you the job, would you be interested? So it's difficult, Chris, in those situations. It's difficult to frame an answer that's not going to offend somebody. And I think De Zerbi's found himself in a bit of a tight spot. However, I will say that what is known about De Zerbi in the football world, in the Premier League world, is that he is, let's say, he's quite a forceful character, strong opinions, not afraid to express them. So he'll know what he's doing. He's hedging his bets. He's also pushing the envelope at Brighton, because in his mind, he'll be thinking to himself, this is an opportunity to strengthen my position at Brighton. If Liverpool don't come for me, if they go for someone else, I need to use this to make sure that my position is stronger. And of course, he's talking about money for players. Like any Brighton manager will talk about money for players, because the model that we know at Brighton is to buy small and sell big and reinvest small. That is what they do, and it's worked for them. But that doesn't mean that if you're the manager, you're not going to get frustrated.
Hold That Thought. We'll be back right after this.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Now, we thought the relegation door was closed a long time ago, didn't we? We've been thinking for a while, certainly Sheffield United, Burnley were down. Luton have made a fist of it, but I did point out a while ago that their away fixtures will probably get them, and they've just had one of them away at Tottenham and they've lost it, and they've got another one coming up this midweek away at Arsenal, which I imagine they would lose as well. However, the Nottingham Forest point deduction has changed things a little bit, and all of a sudden I'm looking at the league table thinking, blimey, if J. Rodriguez had scored that late chance for Burnley at Chelsea, or had Sheffield United not conceded late goals again at home to Fulham at the weekend, they might have half a chance of catching Forest. Am I right?
Well, the point about J. Rodriguez hitting the bar, I mean, the posts and the bar are there just to hold the net up. So, I mean, you know, if, buts, maybes, anybody can say
no,
that.
No, yeah. There's a follow-up as well, wasn't
there? There was the follow-up.
Put the follow-up over.
There was the follow-up. Should he have scored? Yes. Yeah, you are right. All of a sudden, I think you're listening to me somewhere, because I said this earlier on in the weekend about Burnley. I've written them off. I sort of written them off all season in many respects. But all of a sudden, you look at the table, think, well, they're, you know, they're only 4 points off getting out of it. I've really felt for them at the weekend. I don't know whether you've seen the Chelsea penalty with Mudryk diving, Essignon getting sent off, and then poor Vincent Kompany. Well, say poor Vincent Kompany had choice words, and you know would have ended up deservedly getting sent off, I suppose. But they must feel, because of the situation they are in and their recent form, that they do have a sniff. So maybe we have got that wrong. But Sheffield United have had it. I'm not, and based on, you know, at the weekend, they think they were two up at Bournemouth the other week, weren't they? And ended up drawing the game. Same again at the weekend. That's why they will get relegated. If anybody's going to get out of it, it will be Burnley. But I would still think that's a tall order. We're 8 games left now, so still got work to do. But you know, I'm sort of with you on that. They do have a tiny glimmer.
Burnley's next 3 games: Wolves, Everton, Brighton. Now, nothing's a gimme in the Premier League, wherever you are. Never mind if you're Burnley. But Burnley might look at those, Wolves, Everton, Brighton, think, right, come on, get 4 points maybe out of those 3, even more, better, maybe 5 points out of those 3. And because Forest aren't picking up points, Forest aren't winning, are they? Forest drew at home with Palace.
They picked one up at the weekend.
I mean, 3 points at a time. I mean, they're not winning. That's what I mean. Not winning, are they? So, I don't know. I think there's for someone with a bit of gumption, you can pull themselves together. If any of those bottom 3 teams, Luton, Burnley, Sheffield United, could win 3 games on the spin, right? It is football. It can happen. 3 games on the spin.
Sheffield United have won 3 all season.
I'm just saying. Opportunities.
You know, now you want them to win 3 on the spin. So this is glass half full, Ladyman, again. So, okay, understand all that. Who's the 3 going down? Hello?
Luton, Burnley and Sheffield United are going down, I think. But, you know, this is a podcast. We're supposed to have kind of slight, we're supposed to encourage people to look at things slightly differently. It's not all supposed to be about the obvious. And that's actually quite a nice segue into our next little section, which is, it is April the 1st today. Now, I'm on holiday. I'm in Ireland at the moment, Northern Ireland, having a lovely time. Ate far too much yesterday, but did manage to watch a little bit of football as well. And I woke up this morning thinking, April 1st. April Fools, are they still a thing? Are they still a thing? They used to be when I was a kid. The newspapers used to do one. There was always one on the 9 o'clock news. There was one at school. You don't hear that much about them these days. Or there was. I did wake up this morning to see Justin Rose, the golfer, saying on his Twitter page that he's about to sign for Aldershot, which I presume is an April Fool. I've no idea what Aldershot's options are up front, but I presume that's an April Fool. Anyway, quick flick through Google this morning. I did come up with 4 really good April Fool's gags. Whatever is right. From football's past. And this is, I'm going to start off with the best one. This is an absolute corker, by the way. 1989, April 1989, Shoot magazine, which you and I will remember from our youth, used to sell tens of thousands of copies back in the day, Shoot magazine, pre-internet, all the rest of it. Front page, Ian Rush, I'm signing for Everton. It was on the front page, right? But it was an interview. And inside the magazine, Rush apparently had the magazine down to Melwood. They'd come down, all with Liverpool's agreement. They'd taken the photographs. He was photographed wearing an Everton shirt for the front page of the magazine. His wife was even quoted as saying, "I've always wanted him to sign for Everton because the shirt matches the colour of his eye, the colour of his eyes." And thousands of people bought it. Thousands of people bought the gag. And it was even more extraordinary, given that, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Liverpool and Everton met in an FA Cup final that year. So it's extraordinary to think that you could, in this day of kind of where everything is hyper-managed in football, you can't get within 20 metres of a footballer without going through seven layers of security and seven different PR people. And there you had 1989, Ian Rush on the front of Shoot magazine saying why I'm signing for Everton. A couple of others. On that very same day, April the 1st, 1989, a radio station in Italy reported that Madonna was dating Maradona, which was just a clumsy play on words, but actually backfired because Maradona was married and his partner and his wife called up demanding a retraction because she thought that the whole world had just been told that her husband was dating the most famous pop star in the world. Oh, so they had to apologise for that one. 1995. Neil Ruddock. Now, you remember the Predator boots. You may even have worn Predator boots. I don't know. Predator boots.
No, I never wore them. Remember them.
So Predator boots were made by Adidas. Craig Johnston, the former Liverpool Australian player, he invented them. They were football boots that had special kind of pimples and wrinkles on them, supposed to help you control the ball, swerve
wrinkles?
It in swerve it in different directions. Anyway,
wrinkles.
Well, you should know about those. April the 1st, 1995, Neil Ruddock appeared in one of the Red Top newspapers wearing a Predator headband, which they called the Headiter, which was supposed to enable you to head the ball further. The Headiter. That was also an April Fool. And 2016, Southampton FC told the world 8 years ago that they were going to repurpose their club badge. And this was a very modern one. And they were going to, whatever their badge is, I must admit, I don't know, and I should know, but I don't. They were going to bin it and replace it with the emoji symbol for a saint. I don't know what the emoji symbol for a saint is either. But that's a very, very modern one. And there was a certain section of their fan base that fell for that as well. So there we go. Four April Fools from the past. I don't think Justin Rose will be signing for Aldershot, but you never know. Now, talking of April Fools, I don't know whether it's worth going into Brentford versus Manchester United, but maybe it is. United are a bit of a joke again on Saturday night, although not as much a joke as the 8 p.m. kickoff time, which we touched upon on the show last week. Ridiculous asking Manchester United supporters to try and get home from London on Easter Saturday at 10 o'clock. Really is scandalous that they should even consider for scheduling a game for that particular time. United fans will be wishing that they didn't go. Another desperate performance from them. The statistics around that game really were extraordinary. United have played four games in March and their opponents have had a total of 106 shots in those four games. United have faced more shots in 2024 than any other Premier League club. And if you consider that Sheffield United have been routinely losing at home 6-0, 5-0 for as long as we can remember, that is quite some stat. Very, very briefly, it's just a little bit typical of Manchester United, isn't it, to come off the back of that uplifting victory in the FA Cup against Liverpool and then provide the supporters with that.
Yep, but is it a surprise? You know, I'll keep this short. It's like Groundhog Day, isn't it, for Manchester United all season? You know, it's pretty alarming, the stat which you've chucked out there. What does that tell us? Too easy to play against, haven't scored enough goals. I've got the league table in front of me. You know, you actually look at Brentford have scored more goals than Manchester United this season. And this, essentially, it falls on Erik ten Hag, hence why, as far as I can see, he's got no chance of being in charge at the start of next season. They haven't made progress. They have been spawny. They have been lucky. They have more points than they deserve. And it summed them up at the weekend, that performance at Brentford. Lucky again. Nearly got 3 points. That would have been a robbery.
I tell you what did sum them up actually at the weekend was the Brentford equaliser. Just the very nature of it. Kind of slightly hopeful ball kind of lifted over the top towards the byline, which a Brentford player was allowed to collect. Oh, Ivan Toney, actually, not any old Brentford player. It was Ivan Toney, who had a very, very good game. There were four Manchester United players around him. He's still allowed to turn, pull the ball back, and the next minute it's in the back of the net. And I think what was telling after that was that given that we were in the 99th minute of the game or something at that point, Brentford's reaction was not to just celebrate with relief that they'd equalised. They wanted the ball out of the net. They wanted to get the ball out of the net because they thought they could. They thought they could win it. They thought they could win it. And I think that is one of the great tragedies of Erik ten Hag's tenure at Manchester United in the last 6-7 months is that everybody thinks they can beat them now. Everybody thinks they can beat them. However, I will still say, and I said it before, and I did call it last time. That's the hardest game Liverpool have between now and the end of the season is at Old Trafford next Sunday. And having lost though in the cup already, it's not going to make it any easier for them.
Let's see. You've said a lot of things before. I know you like that phrase. I've said it before, but you've said a lot of things before and got them wrong.
Well, unless you're going to remind me of them,
we can do. So have I. So have I. But that's not one of my catchphrases.
Right. Okay. Now listen. We've had some. We do have some Manchester United listeners, a couple of whom have accused me of being biased against Manchester United in previous weeks, but I can't help it. We do have to read out their results every week. We do have to put the league table in the newspaper.
We all watch them.
Yeah, we do. Anyway, look, with that in mind, if you are listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, please remember to leave us some comments and please remember to hit that big fat subscribe button because it's really important to us. Now, Chris, what are your moments of the weekend, or what is your moment of the weekend?
My moment of the weekend was involving a game north of the border, Rangers against Hibs at the weekend, and it's about the Hibs Twitter account. Now, there's a sort of running joke in Scottish football about the number of penalties Rangers get awarded, and I've got to say, I don't know whether you've seen the penalty which they were awarded at the weekend.
Dubious.
Corner goes in. It's a dubious, very, very dubious at all. And the Hibs Twitter account, it did make me chuckle, tweeted, penalty to Rangers, who had 20 minutes? ? Even other clubs' Twitter accounts are onto it. I thought that was tongue-in-cheek, very, very good.
So you're not mentioning the other Hibs incident of the weekend, the greatest incident of the weekend. This is absolutely. I thought it was nailed on that you would do this one. So if I mention to you, I'll put my glasses on to read this. If I mention to you the names Nectorious Trantis, Joe Newell, and Will Fish, what are you going to tell me?
Well, yeah. So Hibs tried to take a free kick.
Trantis takes a free kick.
Trantis did. He took the free kick, and in doing so, he hammers the ball into Joe Newell's face from about 8 yards away. Absolutely smashes it. So Joe Newell goes down, and the ball ricochets as you would. I mean, he's absolutely blasted it. And the ball, so he goes down, and the ball comes off Newell's face and ricochets into Will Fish. It takes him out as well.
And he also goes down.
Fish like a kipper. Two down.
Absolutely extraordinary. It really is. For anyone who hasn't seen it, I know this is an audio first production, but please go and find that because you have to. Just put Trantis Newell Will Fish into a Google search and you'll be in for the best possible treat of your Easter Monday. Now, as usual, sticking with my moments to weekend, sticking with Scottish football, I noticed that Aberdeen still haven't got a manager. A month after Neil Warnock walked away and said, I'm walking away because I know they've got a new man coming in soon. Well, they haven't because he hasn't arrived yet. Although Aberdeen did win at the weekend, beat Ross County 2-1, didn't they? So maybe they're doing fine without one.
Neil Warnock hasn't come out of this very well. He's looking like Pinocchio.
Yeah, I'm not sure he'll be that bothered. I'm not sure he'll be that bothered, Neil. I think he'll be okay. But you're right, he hasn't. We said a couple of weeks ago it wasn't a good look for Scottish football. People came on to me saying, what are you talking about? So it's nothing to do with Scottish football. It's just Aberdeen. But I think generally, if a big club finds itself treated in this way, it doesn't reflect greatly on the environment either. The environment being Scottish football. Now, my moment of the weekend, I'm going to go all the way back to the start of the season when, thinking our very first show, my very first moment of the weekend was Harvey Barnes scoring a goal for Newcastle against Aston Villa, who I think they beat 5-1 on opening day, and celebrating with a somersault and then firing an imaginary arrow into the crowd and a big chap without his shirt on in the crowd firing it straight back. Harvey Barnes' season hasn't gone particularly well since then. Long injury, very, very difficult for him in his first year. He was back at the weekend and scored twice as Newcastle came from behind in a thrilling game at St James's Park to beat West Ham.
I was there.
Well, you were there, so I didn't know that. Well, that must have been a treat. You were there for Five Live. Must have been a treat then. Because that place, I know we've talked a lot about the atmosphere at Anfield, or I have anyway, particularly before that Man City game, and said it was unbeatable. But that place, St James's Park, is still a rare old place to be, isn't it, when Newcastle have got the blood up like that. It's a great place to be.
Yeah, absolutely. I love the game. I think David Moyes made a massive mistake taking Antonio off. Mm. Calvin Phillips, poor guy, came on and had an absolute stinker.
Yeah.
Felt for him. But this is why, we've spoken about Eddie Howe in the past, this is why Newcastle will stick with Eddie Howe. The crowd have his back, but they're injury ravaged, players dropping like flies. Oh, I mean, Barnes only got on because of it, because Almiron, who had come on as a sub, then gets injured, comes off, Barnes goes on. And both finishes were good, but his second finish was incredible. But Newcastle smelt blood. They went for it. Brand of football. That's why they love Eddie Howe. And it was one of the best atmospheres I've been at.
A couple of things I thought of. It does make you wonder when you hear that atmosphere at St James's whether they really can leave there, because Newcastle are thinking about leaving, because again, in these days of profit and sustainability rules, etc., they've got to find a way to have a stadium that makes them more money, and the logical option for that is to move and build somewhere else. But imagine leaving that place. Imagine leaving all that behind, because they wouldn't be able to recreate it somewhere else. It doesn't work that way.
No, I agree. I played there many, many times. It's a special, special stadium. I mean, it really is. And it's close to the train station as well. So, which is selfishly important.
That walk between this football ground and this train station, which only takes you about 8 minutes, especially if you walk at the speed that we do, as young fit.
You've got little strides.
Young fit chaps. Yeah, I do.
Takes me four.
Yeah, twice as many strides as you. It was quite. Anyway, takes you past seven or eight absolutely wonderful pubs. I mean, what a walk. Seriously, if you do the right route, you can go past some absolute corking pubs on the way to. And there's another one on the platform.
Is that how you base your walk?
Yes.
Is it?
Yes.
That's how you remember walks. Well,
no, that's how I...
Pubs, no, which you go...
Football grounds, all...
Maybe says a lot about you. Maybe says a lot about the North.
Not going there. All football grounds should have two or three really lovely pubs between them. Wherever your car is, wherever the train station is, Newcastle ticks all the boxes for that. One of the other things that I did notice from that game at Newcastle was a piece of beautiful Martin Keown... analysis on Match of the Day on Saturday night. I love Martin. I'm biased because he writes for us, writes for Mail Sport. But I'm a little bit biased, but he's a fabulous man, Martin. He is one of the best pundits out there. You will never spend time talking about football with Martin Keown and think it's wasted. I wish I could say the same about you, but I can't. Martin Keown will always tell you something.
You're just scared of him.
Right. Anyway, he was describing the Harvey Barnes goal, the winner, the right foot curler into the far corner, and talked about the whippage. He said, look at the whippage, the whippage that he's put on that. Now, I've criticised you before for making up words. You know, whammed is one of your favourite words. Why have you whammed him? Whippage, according to Martin Keown, whippage is a word. Sounds almost medieval. Bit of bondage, maybe.
I think whammed is a word, but whippage... You look like you're in a dungeon at this moment in time, actually.
Hey, don't talk. Don't say that. So I'm in the mother-in-law's house. Don't say that. Whippage. There we go, whippage. Anyway, before we finish, this has been the longest moments of the weekend section I think we have ever had. But that's fine. That's okay. Bit of spontaneity doesn't harm anybody. You mentioned West Ham. You mentioned Calvin Phillips. My God, it can't get any worse for him. He's had another terrible game. He's now been caught on camera giving the bird to West Ham fans as he gets on the team bus. It can only get my God, I hope the corner turns for Calvin at some point because he's going through it there. But I did notice Jared Bowen got 15 Premier League goals. 15 Premier League goals, Jared Bowen. Now, that's an extraordinary number for someone who doesn't necessarily play through the middle. That's a heck of a total.
Yeah, but I'm not surprised. That doesn't, you know, his numbers have, you know, been good for however many seasons now. I mean, he was a David Moyes signing, wasn't he?
Yeah.
You know, from Hull back in the day. I mean, and to think he's got a chance of the Euros, it's difficult to see him getting a start, but he's, you know, given Gareth some food for thought there. But no, he's been a phenomenal player for West Ham.
And I think I'm trying to think of the best way to put this. I think he will get in the Euro squad. Unless something drastic happens between now and May. But I think that he deserves almost double credit for it because he's not playing for a particularly fashionable club. And if this doesn't sound right, he's not a particularly kind of fashionable player. Do you understand what I'm saying? He's not flash, is he? He's not Grealish, he's not Rashford, he's not Foden. He doesn't play for one of the kind of big six. He plays for West Ham. And he's a lad from kind of Hereford, I think. And all I'm saying is he only gets in on the back of his football. He doesn't get in on the back of anything else. Is that wrong? Is that backward? Or do you know what I'm saying?
Totally, totally wrong. I mean, you've lambasted West Ham for not being a fashionable club, which will upset many people we know. You've lambasted Bowen for not being fashionable and Hereford. What is wrong with Hereford? What is wrong with Hereford?
People of Hereford, nothing at all. Right, I think that is a reasonable place to leave it. I think I've got myself into a world of pain there for all the reasons that you've just described. Thank you, everybody, for being with us. I've really enjoyed this morning's chat with Chris. Please remember to hit the subscribe button. Like I say, whether you're at Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please do us that. Please do us that one courtesy. Chris will be back on Thursday. He'll be with Dominic King for the next episode of It's All Kicking Off's weekend preview show. I'll be back next Monday. I'm Ian Lederman. This other chat with Easter eggs spilling out of his pockets is Chris Sutton, and this has been It's All Kicking Off.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.